Thank you, Catherine. A very good morning, and thank you everyone for being here today. Before I start, I'd like to acknowledge the contribution of my advisor, Dr. Ellis, under whose guidance I could successfully conduct my study, and a very special thanks to my mentor, Dr. Catherine Sherwood, who's here today to support me, and she's always believed in me and my research in the last 6 years. So thank you very much. So I get started right now. I conducted a qualitative study regarding the gynecological examination concerns of women with developmental disabilities. I have no relationships to disclose. So the statement of the problem was, although the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists recommend that all women receive regular gynecological examination, little is known about the perceived barriers or the perceived experiences of these women regarding the gynecological exam. So the purpose of my study was to assess the knowledge, the needs, cues to action, barriers using the health belief model regarding the gynecological exam for the self-advocates. So who are the self-advocates? The self-advocates are a group of empowered women with developmental disabilities that promote independence, equality, and self-sufficiency for other women with disabilities. So the research question that was addressed, the first research question was, what is the current knowledge and needs of self-advocates concerning the gynecological exam? This also relates to the construct of cue to action in the health belief model. And the second research question addressed was, what barriers prevent these women from accessing the GYN examination? So what is the health belief model? Just to give you a background, HBM is a value expectancy theory which is based on the assumption that people desire to be well or stay away from illness, and they believe that the recommended health action will keep them away from these illnesses. This is the visual model of the health belief model. I'm going to talk about each of the constructs in the following slides. So the first construct is perceived susceptibility. It's an individual's opinion of the chances or the risk of getting a condition, followed by perceived severity. It's an individual's opinion of the potential consequences of the condition. Perceived benefits is what the individual believes that the recommended action would benefit them with, or the potential benefits of the advised action. Perceived barriers are the tangible and the psychological obstacles that prevent these people from adopting the recommended health action. The final two constructs are cues to actions. These are the external influences that help or promote the desired or recommended action. These could be the information sought, it could be reminders, it could be media strategies. Self-efficacy is the confidence in one's ability to be able to successfully conduct or perform the recommended action. Likelihood of action, that's the prediction of the model that an individual would most likely undertake the recommended action. It's like a formula that fits in well together, where you have your perceived threat, which is your perceived susceptibility with severity, coupled with cues to action, with the benefits, minus the barriers, and the prediction of likelihood of the action. I had 25 subjects recruited across the state of Indiana via the Indiana Institute of Disability and Center. I had a 1 hour long focus group sessions with 4 to 5 people in each group. The session was recorded and analyzed thematically. This gives you an idea about the nature of the disability of my respondents. We had 15 with Down syndrome, 6 with mild cerebral palsy, and 4 with moderate cerebral palsy. So the first question to assess the self-efficacy was, why are you a member of self-advocates? Majority of them were proud to be a self-advocate, and they thought by being a self-advocate, they were the voice for other women, as well as they could be more informed about certain issues, as well as express their opinions. To gauge the knowledge base and the sources of information, or from whom or what individuals did they receive information about the gynecological examination? Majority of them said that nobody either talks about the exam and they have received no formal education. A quote that stood out was, "I'm not aware of what's normal, hence find it difficult to know if what I'm going through is normal or abnormal." And continuing with another quote, but said, and I think that's a lot what's missing with people with disabilities, the information they need for whatever, they can't get to it because the state or whoever else won't let them get to it. Continuing with the sources of information, a lot of them, say around 15 out of 25, said the first time they were introduced to any kind of information was during their first examination. Seven of them said they got it from their mother. And around 6-8 of them said that they were really embarrassed to talk to their mother or a friend, even though they received the information from the mother. The other sources were the TV, internet. Two people said that they did have special ed classes, but were not satisfied with the information provided to them regarding the GYN examination. So to get an idea of the perceived benefit, we asked them, what does the gynecological examination mean to you? 19 of them said it was mandated by law because it was 19 who lived in community group homes. So as required by the law, they had to go for an yearly examination. 22, the majority said, or they related it to having good health. Again, to assess the perceived susceptibility and severity, sometimes we had to rephrase certain questions in order for them to give us the answers or to be able to relate it to the constructs in the health belief model. So we asked them, how long ago was your last exam? And the 19 who lived in the group home said it was a year back or maybe less because it was required by the law. The 6 who lived with their families or who had parents as their guardians said 5 of them couldn't remember. And one of them said it was around 2 years back because of a complaint that she had. Then asked again, what were the past reasons for your gynecological examination in order to assess the susceptibility and severity? Required regular screening, painful periods, and hysterectomy along with cramps topped the list. Another quote when asked about their past reasons was, most of my complaints were ignored and I was sent back every time telling me that it was related to the disability till the time things got worse and I had to be operated on. We asked them, what do you consider the benefits of having a gynecological examination? 23 said that it helps detect cancer. They knew pap smear and they said pap smear was something required to detect cancer. 8 of them said it maintains good health. And a lady spoke out saying, I tell myself to get it done. That way I'll make myself healthier. Again, when we asked them continuing with the perceived benefits, helps with cramps, keeps away diseases, catches lumps in the breast. When we asked them what health risk the examination could help prevent or detect early for you, again, most of them said it was the pap smear which prevented or detected cancer for them. It was interesting when 2 of them said flu because they perceived a specialist to be a general MD first. So they said going to a gynecologist also helps preventing the flu. Finally, to assess the barriers, we asked them what prevents them or what makes it difficult for them to get the gynecological exam. Based on the responses, I divided it into different categories, the first being the exam room issues. Almost everyone had issues with the table. They thought it was too high, was uncomfortable, found it difficult staying on it, was too cold. They also said staying in stirrups was extremely uncomfortable. An interesting thing, response that I got was related to the gender of the physician. As the quote suggests, they were very embarrassed to have or go to a male physician. They, you know, one person talked about a past abuse. They had trust issues related to a male physician. They found it extremely embarrassing. The next category was communication with the healthcare provider. They thought that the doctor was extremely hard to understand and they were embarrassed to ask the doctor to repeat. They also felt that the doctor could not understand them, and they found it difficult to express their discomfort to the physician. Continuing with the communication barrier, around 5 people said, "I would not know what to ask. The staff does this talking." The staff herein means the caregiver or the guardian who goes along with the person with disability during the examination. One of them said, "Doctor should explain my condition to me as well and not just my staff or guardian. I feel ignored. It's my body and I have the right to know what's happening before anyone else." The communication regarding the health issue. People said they need to be told what's wrong with them. Around 9 said that they tied their tubes and didn't give me the reason for doing it. When I quote these, it's basically the shared sentiment that was expressed by everyone. Everyone did not necessarily say it in this way, but it was the sentiment that was expressed by these quotes. "The doctor doesn't tell me what's wrong with me. I feel ignored, and I think it's because of my disability." Negative attitudes. Now, negative attitudes by itself, they do not perceive it as a barrier, but the fear and the scary comments proved to be a barrier that prevented them from getting or accessing gynecological examinations on a regular basis. They were also uncomfortable with the clinical breast examination. "I don't like the staff touching my breast. It's my breast and I want to examine it myself." We had around 11 people talking about the health insurance restriction, which limited their choice of physicians as a barrier to gynecological examination. We then asked them, "What would make it easier for you to get the examination?" to relate it to cues to action. Everyone had recommendations about the table, make it more comfortable, decrease the height, preferred a woman doctor. They really stressed the importance of having information both prior and during the examination. "They feel doctors should talk to us during the examination. I felt my doctor was uncomfortable talking to me because I had a disability." Continuing with cues to actions, they wanted the instruments to be warmed before being inserted to them, at the same time given a heads up or inform them that they were about to be examined with a certain instrument. They asked if it was possible to transform the wheelchair itself into an examination table. That way, they do not really have to be picked up or transported from the wheelchair onto the examination table. 3 of them really had nothing that could encourage them. They said, "Nothing. I'm just going to be scared all the time." 2 of them said it would be nice if there was someone to explain the whole process in a sign language. For the people who got the examination done, the way they got it done and convinced them to get it done was, it's a 10-minute thing that has to be endured and then not worry about it for another year. But when we asked them if it was not mandated, would you still go for a regular examination? And all 25 said no. So the recommendations of the self-advocates or the respondents, they recommended that the doctor or the physician should have knowledge of the patient's background before they go in. They again emphasized that the doctor needs to talk to me through the entire process of the examination. They want the physician to be nicer, more patient, and be able to explain things more than once. The recommendations regarding the examination table, modify the table based on their needs. If possible, transform the wheelchair into the examination table. Do away with stirrups. Talking about stirrups, one lady actually had a very interesting suggestion. She said, "Why not, if you cannot do away with stirrups, at least have tiny socks at the end so that I can keep my feet warm during the examination?" The respondents' recommendations regarding information and patient education, there was a need for formal education and resources. They wanted someone to come in and regularly talk to them about the examination. If possible, have short video clips with an explanation at every step. They needed information about sexually transmitted diseases, contraceptive alternatives. I had 4 women who were sexually active, and they said they need information about contraception. They wanted information about the breast self-exam and menstruation. The conclusions of the study, which relate to the knowledge construct or the research question regarding the knowledge, is around 4/5 of the women receive their information only during the first exam. Large majority of the self-advocates do not receive any formal or informal talks regarding the female health exam. Regarding the perceived susceptibility, their knowledge was primarily restricted to pap smears for cancer prevention. Women with developmental disabilities expressed the same risks, concerns, and the need for information as other women. Residents living in private households were less likely to get the gynecological examinations as opposed to those in the community group homes. So, conclusions. When we had a majority of people recognize the benefits of the gynecological exam, minus the barriers that I previously discussed, so we would expect that it would predict the likelihood to action. But that was not the case, because as I stated earlier, when we asked them if they would go for the regular screening, recognizing the benefits of it, if it was not required by the law, they said no. So the perceived barriers outweighed the perceived benefits or the cues to action. My recommendations would initially target personal caregivers and the healthcare providers. It's important to tailor the basic education for these women so that they have their information prior as well as during the examination. Given the overwhelming response related to the gender of the OBGYN, consider the gender preference wherever possible. Address the exam room barriers. Importantly, adopt an individualized approach. Every woman is different. Like, I had two people recommend a sign language interpreter. Make that available if possible. So tailor each interaction, patient individual interaction, based on every woman's needs. And finally, target women in private residences for the exams. My next step after this study is a pre and post study for the development of an educational intervention tailored especially for women with developmental disabilities regarding the GYN exam across 6 states via the Indiana Institute on Disability. Thank you.